Good morning from the newsroom of the Financial Times. Today is Monday, September 16th, and this is your FT News Briefing. Saudi Arabia's oil industry is reeling after an attack this weekend on a vital crude processing center. Chinese companies have switched from being prolific buyers of global assets to net sellers. Thousands of workers at General Motors are set to strike, and the UK's Brexit secretary says Britain could stay in a standstill transition deal with the EU for the next 3 years. Plus, the FT's Mehul Srivastava previews Israel's second election of the year and why the stakes are so high for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm Mark Filippino, and here's the news you need to start your day. Oil prices soared early this morning after a major attack this weekend on Saudi Arabia's oil infrastructure. Iran-aligned Houthi rebels have claimed responsibility for what they said was an attack by 10 drones on two oil facilities. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo accused Iran of launching Saturday's attack, which cut more than half of Saudi Arabia's production this weekend. When markets reopened this morning, the price of the benchmark Brent crude jumped as much as 20% to above $71 a barrel. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted just before the market opened, saying he had authorized the release of emergency oil stocks if needed, in a quote, to-be-determined amount. There are concerns about how long it'll take Saudi Arabia to recover output towards the 9.8 million barrel a day level it was producing before the attack. Saudi Arabia supplies more than 10% of global crude and is the world's largest exporter of oil. As the de facto leader of OPEC, Saudi Arabia is assessing whether it'll need to ask other member countries to temporarily raise production to calm markets until its output can fully recover. Chinese companies have done a deal-making 180 this year, going from being big buyers of global assets to net sellers. All in all, Chinese companies have agreed to sell about $40 billion in overseas assets so far this year. That's up from $32 billion for all of last year, according to data from Dealogic. Meanwhile, Chinese groups have bought just $35 billion in overseas assets in 2019. A lot of these companies have been highly acquisitive for roughly a decade, since the groups became big players in international mergers and acquisitions. But the recent role reversal comes as economic growth in China slows to a 30-year low, and trade tensions with the U.S. start to take a toll on manufacturers. Business conditions have deteriorated for many companies that were striking billion-dollar deals in the U.S. and Europe just 2 years ago. Access to credit has also tightened. Labor contract talks have broken down at General Motors, and thousands of employees are set to strike. Over the weekend, the United Auto Workers called for what would be the first auto industry walkout in more than a decade. Union leaders and GM management couldn't come to an agreement over the pay and health care benefits for a new four-year labor contract at the carmaker's U.S. factories. GM has nearly 46,000 U.S. factory workers. And Britain could stay in a standstill transition deal with the EU until the end of 2022. That's according to Brexit Secretary Steve Barclay. Right now, the transition has an estimated end date of December 2020. If it were to be extended, it would allow more time to reconvene the suspended Stormont Assembly in Belfast. That would give the people of Northern Ireland a say on the oversight of any Irish border backstop. It would also give sides more time to put in place new technological systems to avoid a hard border in Ireland. Downing Street did not deny that Britain could extend the transition until 2022. But a source at Downing Street did say they don't see a need for a longer transition period. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is meeting with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker today to explore the terms of a possible deal. Meanwhile, at their party conference yesterday, the Liberal Democrats voted to cancel Brexit if they came to power at the next election. New party leader Jo Swinson claims she could be Britain's next prime minister, and that she wanted to revoke Article 50 and scrap Brexit. And here's a closer look at a story you should know more about. Back in April, it looked like Benjamin Netanyahu would serve a fifth term as prime minister, becoming the longest-serving PM in Israeli history. But even though Mr. Netanyahu's right-wing Likud party had won the election, the prime minister failed to form a new coalition after he was unable to secure the 61 seats needed in the Knesset. And so, tomorrow, Israel will have a second general election this year. The FT's Jerusalem correspondent, Mehul Srivastava, explains how Mr. Netanyahu found himself in this position.
One of his longtime allies, his ex-defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, made a crucial demand right in the middle of building a coalition that Mr. Netanyahu rein in his other coalition allies, which include two ultra-Orthodox parties, which have had a significant role in Israeli politics in keeping the ultra-Orthodox minority segregated from the rest of the country, exempt from serving in the military, running their own schools. That was something Mr. Netanyahu can't do because he needed support from both Mr. Lieberman and the ultra-Orthodox. So he dissolved parliament right before a deadline that would give the opposition a chance to build a coalition.
What campaign promises has Mr. Netanyahu made leading up to this election?
Mr. Netanyahu has been forced to the extreme right of the political spectrum. In the last 2 or 3 weeks, he has seized upon a rather controversial issue where, without evidence, he has claimed that Arab-Israeli voters are going to commit large-scale electoral fraud. He's tried to force cameras into voting booths, something that neither the Supreme Court nor the parliament would approve of. At the same time, he's appealed to the over 500,000 Israeli Jews who live in the occupied West Bank, who are worried that if a left-wing government or a government that's not Mr. Netanyahu comes to power, the permanence of these settlements would come under issue. So he went ahead and promised that if he were to win this election, he would immediately annex a 2,400-kilometer swath of the West Bank and over time would apply Israeli sovereignty to the other settlements that are scattered across the West Bank. This, in a very complicated manner, would eventually make it nearly impossible for a Palestinian state to take hold because it would divide up whatever remaining territory there is into these unconnected Bantustans and not be a viable contiguous state. This is a demand that the right wing has had of Mr. Netanyahu for a long time, and he's waited for a friendly administration in the U.S. to try and pull this off. He has a very receptive audience in U.S. President Donald Trump, and he believes that if he can pull off this election, this is the one thing he can promise that only he can deliver.
Mehul, why are the stakes so high for Mr. Netanyahu?
Look, every election is considered crucial, but for Mr. Netanyahu, this one is perhaps the most important of his life. In October, he will face a hearing that will decide whether or not he is to be indicted on charges of corruption, bribery, and fraud. If he is unable to form a coalition, he will have to face this in opposition, and that makes him vulnerable to rivals within his own Likud party who've been waiting for decades for Mr. Netanyahu to lose his grip on power. On the other hand, if he wins, he has promised to try and get an immunity clause through parliament so that he and all the other MPs, they call them MKs over here, members of Knesset, will enjoy immunity from prosecution as long as they stay in power. The stakes for Mr. Netanyahu could not be higher.
You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.